Good evening and welcome to Out of Bounds. I'm Tish Perlman. My guests are Rachel Lampert and Carl Gregory. Lampert is a playwright, actor, and director, and since 1997 she has been the artistic producing director of Ithaca's Kitchen Theater. Gregory is an award-winning actor who has been with the Kitchen for the past three seasons. Welcome to the show.
Nice to be here.
Rachel, I know you spent the early part of your career doing dance and starting a dance company and so on. What drew you to performing in the first place?
Well, when I was a little girl, my aunt was an actress in New York, and she had been in the Yiddish Theater and also on Broadway, and she brought me when I was five to see what was then the Sadler Wells Ballet, it's now the Royal Ballet, and I saw Margot Fonteyn dance, and it's like a, you know, I guess it's like a Hollywood story. I said to my Aunt May, I want to be that. And she kind of shepherded me through the early part of my career, getting me to the right dance teachers in New York. And my parents, who are both professionals, thought this was a nice avocation, but not necessarily a vocation. Mm-hmm. So I think I just was bit by the bug. And because she was a theater person, she took me to see a lot of things when I was a little girl throughout my life. And growing up in Brooklyn is a help, you know. You do get to see, you know, when you go to a museum, it's the Metropolitan Museum of Art, you know. So my interest in theater and in the arts started very young.
Mm-hmm. Well, what about you, Carl?
I started performing in, you know, middle school, high school, and little shows and stuff, and did community theater productions. And I got into Syracuse University for acting. And that's kind of where I really solidified that this is what I'm going to do. Mm-hmm. And then went to New York very briefly after I graduated, and then got my first job at the Kitchen Theater in 2002.
Interesting. And interesting that you guys found these vocations and you found out you were actually even good at them. You know, I mean, some people have these dreams,
you know,
like Margot Fonteyn, and
right.
Then you stumble onto the stage. You know?
Well, you know, I think a lot of it is tenacity. And I would say for me, it's taken me my whole life to actually find the things that the thing I really want to do, which is I really want to write. And in all of my dance work, I always included words. I didn't really know that that's where I was headed. And running a theater is very different than running a dance company, so I feel like suddenly all of it's come together, and the talents that I had that I may have thought were my really important ones are kind of background now to what I think is really coming to the forefront, which is writing. But I look at Carl and I think, well, he was destined because he's so expert at what he does, you know, at a very young age. So, and a lot of people don't find that. I mean, people want to be in the theater, but they may have the talent, but it also takes tenacity because the right place at the right time is an expression that has a lot of meaning in the theater because a lot of very talented people are not able to have a career in the theater.
When did you write your first piece for the theater? Do you remember?
Actually, it was my first piece. I went to NYU to what's now called Tisch School of the Arts, and my first dance piece had words in it. I wrote plays when I was in elementary school, but that was kind of, you know, in school. But and of course, my friend Mary Weingarten and I did a lot of plays in the garage.
We did plays in the garage too, and there was always a witch.
Well, we used to have her. She had a younger brother, Ira, who we would force to be in all the plays, who hated it. He just hated it, you know. And Ira would at one point just get really furious at the two of us and like throw something at us, and then we'd complain to Mary's mother that Ira wasn't cooperating. He was the only actor we had.
when you're writing a script for the theater, do you come up with characters first or do you come up with a story first?
I usually come up with an idea around which I'm going to create a story. But here in Ithaca, the really exciting thing is that I created around the people who are in the Kitchen Theater Company.
So you write roles for specific actors.
Very much so. And I was really pleased to find out that so did Noel Coward. Sometimes I think it's a little bit of, not that it's cheating in any way, but that knowing who the actor is going to be for me really helps. I think it's because I come from the dance company model where they were the clay that I was modeling. And so it's so much easier for me to write a play with an idea, and then, oh, these actors. Sometimes there's actors I don't know, but I know a few actors who are going to be in the play.
How interesting. You know, you hear about people doing that in movies.
Oh, yeah.
I'm writing the script for Sharon Stone, or, you know,
right.
Something like that.
Right.
I hadn't thought about it. I didn't remember that Noel Coward had done that.
Yeah, and he often knew exactly what actor he was writing for. So when I first wrote when I wrote Frankenstein, actually, Carl was in that, and I knew that Carl would be in it, and I knew that Bill Gorman would be in it. And I made, and Carl played, he played the creature. But I made the creature.
I would never have guessed.
Well, I mean, he's so not what one would think of as
absolutely,
the creature,
right.
Because he's not, you know, a big, giant, hulking guy. Mm-hmm. But I wrote the play for this, for what I felt was the side of the creature that Mary Shelley really wanted us to understand, which was the fact that he was just an outsider. He was mm-hmm. a lost mm-hmm. person, and a person who didn't fit in anywhere, and Carl could bring all of that pathos and, mm-hmm. and humanity mm-hmm. to the creature and still be threatening at mm-hmm. the same time, because mm-hmm. when he needs to be, he overpowers Dr. Frankenstein.
Which brings me to a subject I want to bring up with you. How do you approach developing a character?
Well, with each piece, it's completely different. You know, when you're working on a new play, say, you know, when we were working on Frankenstein or the current show that we're doing, Drunken City, you have to really go into what you have as the script, because you don't have it beforehand. You know, it's not a play that's been done before, mm-hmm. so you don't have that backstory. So you really get to go and invent a lot of new things, you know, working with the director. And it's really good at the kitchen, because we usually get to work with the writers, whether it be Rachel or Adam Bach or, you know, someone else in the company. It's really good to be able to really just have a discourse about what's, you know, what's going on underneath the script, what's going on in the script. So then I can then go and do my work as an actor and, you know, mm-hmm. back work on character and story. And
in some ways it might be easier if it has never been done before, for you to be able to actually create this from scratch.
Oh, yeah,
you know, when
yeah.
when you've seen a famous actor in a role, it's probably in your mind,
yeah.
no matter what.
Yeah, yeah.
So that is much more of a challenge, it would seem to me.
Yeah.
For the director and the actor.
Oh, it's a big challenge. And I must say that that we're lucky at the theater that we now have a group of actors really interested in it. Because mm-hmm. it is, I mean, for Carl, I hate to keep complimenting him, but especially
well,
on the
it.
Air. But for Carl, it's wonderful, because his mind isn't really always, he's very imaginative, and a lot of things come to him even when there's not a lot on the paper. But for other actors, it's really hard if there isn't a lot to go by on that piece of paper. And sometimes, certainly Adam's plays, and often mine, are still kind of being worked on while we're workshopping mm-hmm. them as mm-hmm. we're working on mm-hmm. them in rehearsal. So some actors, they really need to know everything. And if the playwright isn't there to answer the question, they're kind of lost. So we're lucky that now a lot of the actors have gotten very used to just throwing themselves in and maybe being in uncharted waters mm-hmm. for a while.
And it has much more of a company, group, collaborative feeling, which is what I really love about working at the kitchen. Everyone has a voice, everyone has, you know, an opinion, and everyone's are heard. It's really nice.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it really
is.
That's
amazing. But how do you navigate if you see a character differently than, say, Rachel did as the writer and the director? How do you navigate that relationship?
Well, there's lots of compromise. there was one show, The Book Club, which Rachel wrote, where I had I wasn't supposed to be in it, and I had previously dyed my hair hot magenta pink. Rachel, I had to sub in for an actor in the show. And I said to Rachel, I have hot magenta pink hair right now. I just did it. I had to, you know, strip my hair and dye it that color because I wanted to. So I was like, you know, if I have to dye my hair back right now to brown, my hair will probably all fall out from chemicals and whatnot. So, you know, there was a big old compromise, and Rachel wrote a couple lines in the script
your
about
name
pink
became
hair.
Barbara Cartland.
Right, right. So, I mean, there's a lot of compromise that goes on. Like, I could completely see this character having pink hair with what Rachel had written already without needing to add lines, you know what I mean?
Uh-huh.
And Rachel, you know, then in turn took that and was like, okay, so how can we all collaboratively make this work mm-hmm. and sell it? And it totally works.
It took me a while, I have to say. It took me a while. And we tried it out in previews with the lines about the pink hair. Because Carl was in the book club, there are these two octogenarians who have a book club that's supposedly four women, but in the play, two of them don't show up. So there are two women in their 80s, a middle-aged daughter, and then they have a book club, and the oldest member of the book club has invited this young graduate, a very alternative student, to come and kind of jazz up their book club with different ideas. So I wanted him to be male, and I wanted him to be gay, and I wanted him to be young, so that he would be as far away from them as possible, because mm-hmm. In terms of what we would anticipate would be the way that they would think. Mm-hmm. I didn't expect that he would have pink hair, however.
But I'll bet you she's going to write that in now.
Well,
right?
Now
that's going to be one of the notes.
And in this play in Broken City, Carl had he had to have an operation on his wrist, mm-hmm. so he's not wearing it right now. But he has a wrist brace, which actually has now become incorporated into that character. So Adam Bach said, "I guess now that character always has a broken arm."
You are making it really hard for the people who come out. I don't want to hear it anymore.
Well, with pink hair and broken wrists, they keep casting me in things. So, you know, we got to use what we got.
So you're not a playwright like Edward Albee. I've heard that he gets furious if you change a line or change any kind of a note that's written in his script. But you're flexible because a lot of these things are being created?
There are some things that I'm rather inflexible on. But I think because I came from that choreographer model where, you know, if I do this and then you do that, and you've worked with me for years and I'm just doing a little motion, it's going to be different.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
There's just no way that it's going to be exactly the same. Even my sister, who's also dances, can't quite do it exactly the same. And when you're making a dance piece, everybody's involved in the creation of it. So a lot of times when you're making a character, the actors have a lot to say about the mm-hmm. voice of that character. They actually, you know, you get ahead of them, and then they get ahead of you, and you keep passing the ball. So I like when they add things. In fact, we just did a little workshop of Precious Nonsense. I had somebody come up from New York, and I sat with a friend of mine and the director, and we got a couple of people together to read a play that I just finished. And we ran it, you know, twice in Ithaca, but there were still things that I wanted to change. And it was so nice to hear them say the new lines and then really have time to just sit down there and say, would that happen here? Or how does that affect this? And, you know, sometimes I think it's the very super mature playwrights like Albee, who are certainly I admire, that maybe that they just, it just comes out of them. But they were never like me. I was a performer and a choreographer, so I think I bring that with me in my process.
I would think so. I would think it would give you more flexibility since you've been in every arena and you know what it's like, yeah. I want to turn specifically to the Kitchen Theater now. You've been at the helm there for 8 years, and you've been really successful. And I've never heard anybody say anything bad about the Kitchen Theater. They think it's innovative and interesting and you know, mm-hmm. cutting
great
edge.
Yeah.
Yeah. Has this turned out different from your original mission? What was your original mission for this theater?
Well, when I took it over, mostly I was going to make sure that it got stable, financially stable,
mm-hmm.
but not change it to become too populist, you know. Mm-hmm. And so how do I do that? And I got a lot of help from a lot of friends, particularly some of my New York friends who had more experience in regional theater than I had. And I think what we've done is we've really listened to our audience, and we've really told our audience what we're about, trying to get the mission really clear so people know that we are going to do plays that sometimes challenge you, and you might not like every single play on the season equally well, but every play has been chosen for a very specific reason, to talk about ideas, to talk about issues, or to talk about new formats. You know, when we do a wacky play like The Drunken City, at first it seems like, oh, it's just kind of a send-up of like the bus and tunnel crowd, but actually it's not. When you go a little bit deeper, it's really about people's hopes and dreams, and it's really about some people we don't often represent on our stage. We often represent more educated, more a little more elite group of people. So I've been, I think, pretty clear with our subscribers and our patrons that we're going to keep trying to make the plays that we choose reflect a very diverse community, which we all hope Ithaca is,
mm-hmm.
and we strive for it to be. and that we're also on the other side going to be committed to a group of actors, and that's a flexible thing. It's not, you know, just like 12 actors. It's the company is it changes. Some years we have 25 different people on the stage, but those people in the community and some from New York who we become enamored of are going to be the people who we're also going to be looking at their work, so they can watch the theater develop on the choice of plays, the actors develop over a period of time, the directors and the designers. So there's an investment that the audience, that our subscribers have, that I have to say is astonishing to me, but I feel like we've done in many ways the right thing because they have truly become tremendous supporters of the work we do.
You are listening to Out of Bounds on WEOS. I'm Tish Perlman, and my guests are Rachel Lampert and Carl Gregory. You know, Carl, I wanted to ask you, what has been your favorite role in the Kitchen Theater?
Wow. Yikes, there's been so many. Probably over the last 3 years that I've been a resident company member, I've, including kids' shows and everything and workshops, I've done probably over 30 or 40 productions. One that still very much resonates with me is the first show that I ever did at the Kitchen Theater, and Rachel is shaking her head yes. The first show that I did here was The Cripple of Inishman by Martin McDonagh, where I played a physically crippled 17-year-old Irish boy, you know, crippled emotionally, crippled physically.
I actually saw that, yeah.
It was a beautiful, beautiful production. Okay. The director, Wendy Dan, who I'd worked with at Syracuse University in my undergrad, called me up from New York to do the show, and it was just quite an experience. It was a very personal experience to me and completely changed my life.
Mm-hmm.
And now, you know, since that show, I've been up here for 3 years acting, doing what I want to do.
Uh-huh. You've specifically, at least here, been acting in new pieces. Are there traditional roles that you would love to play? From traditional playwrights like Ibsen?
Yeah, a lot of the roles that I have on my little list, scratched into the back of my journal, a lot of the roles that I have on there are roles that I need about 5 to 10 more years on me to play.
Name a couple.
Prior Walter in Angels in America
is
right on the top of the list. But I need like 5 to 10 years because I look so young.
Well, we could do something. You know, the pink hair, gray it up a bit.
Yeah.
That would be a great role. That would be a great role for you, too.
Yeah.
I've seen you in several productions. You are quite impressive, I must say.
Thank you, Tish.
The Soup Comes Last was produced off-Broadway last year. How did that happen? What was that? It was
what
amazing.
Was that? When I first did the play, I did the play in 1998 at the Kitchen, and it actually was on my first season as the artistic director because Norm Johnson, who was the previous artistic director, had commissioned me to write something, and that's how it came about.
Really?
And it was a huge popular success, and so we did it a few times, and then a producer friend of mine from New York came up and saw it and got the ball rolling on trying to bring it to New York.
Mm-hmm.
And this year seemed like the right year. There was a way to raise enough money for it. There was a theater that was interested in having it and would give us a very good deal, because it's very expensive to do. This was the first year that I felt I could actually leave the theater because our staff is strong enough that I could go away for a month and everything would be fine, which is a wonderful thing.
Yeah.
And so all those things kind of came together. And we also wanted the Kitchen to have an opportunity to be seen downstate.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one of the things that's hard for a little company like ours is that there's so much new work going on in New York City, but to know that there's a place up here in Ithaca that's really trying to champion new work, another way to get that word out was for us to send something down. And the simplest thing for us to send down would be a one-person play.
Yeah.
So, I mean, in terms of expenses, mm-hmm. et cetera. So, because there was a producer in New York interested. So it ran for 4 weeks at 59th Street. It seems like it was 3 years ago because it was only last September,
October. Last
fall,
yeah.
But
and did you were in it, right?
I was it.
You did the whole 4 weeks.
It was me. And
amazing.
It was nice. It got a very nice New York Times review. And
I saw that.
And and a lot of people I hadn't seen in a long time came to see it, and a lot of new New York connections happened. Mm-hmm. People came, and now the kitchen is on their radar screen. Mm-hmm. It also got us in touch with Playbill.com, got interested in a writer from Playbill.com who's interested in new work, and he's since then been very dogged about getting all the things that the kitchen is doing on that website, which is one that's read nationally.
That's amazing.
So
great.
We just thought we were all very excited. I had kind of hoped that we could do a play that I wasn't in because I felt like that sometimes, you know, well, she wrote it, she's in it, you know. I didn't direct it, but I'm looking forward to the time we can do it again with something that we generate and nurture here. But
do you think you'd ever allow anybody else to play that part? Could anybody else play that part?
I would love to have someone else play that
part.
I've
seen that twice. It's a wonderful script, and you're great in it. But
no, but there's many better actors, like the woman who did The Syringa Tree for us this year, Dee Pelletier. Oh boy, I would love to see her do that. And in fact, when we did it in New York, the producer brought other potential money people in, and everyone knew that I was kind of the placeholder for mm-hmm. it, that if it was going to move and go on, there would be another actor in it. Because the writing part and the storytelling was really what I was most interested mm-hmm. in, not actually the performing of it.
Mm-hmm. You know, we keep hearing reports about how home entertainment centers in people's homes and so on are stopping people from going to movies. Is that happening in the theater as well? Is there a drop-off, and do you think it's for the same reasons that people are staying home and watching DVDs? And
well, this year we have sold the most tickets we've ever sold.
No kidding.
So we are, but I think we are not necessarily the average, because when you look at TCG's statistics, a lot of people have had a drop off, particularly in subscribers. People aren't willing mm-hmm. to make that big commitment to a theater. But the kitchen is not. We're not experiencing that. I don't know. I mean, I'm not a social psychologist.
Says something about
yeah.
the quality of your work, I would imagine.
I think people like the intimacy of that experience. Mm-hmm. And as long as once they've been in there with those 73 other people and they're watching the play and it's in such close proximity, they come for that experience. I think the more theater that young people can see, the more people who can be exposed to it, mm-hmm. the more they're going to come.
Mm-hmm.
It's
nothing like it.
Oh, there is nothing
it's
like it.
It's absolute magic. Mm-hmm.
There is nothing like it.
When it works.
Yeah. Yeah. So we haven't experienced that, but I do think that a lot of people watch a lot of television.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You both have recently received awards. Talk to me about that.
Yes. Rachel and I both received a SALT Award, which is Syracuse Area Live Theater, for 2005, both for our one-person shows last summer. Mm-hmm. I did Fully Committed by Becky Mode, which I played a reservationist at a very posh upscale Manhattan restaurant, and I basically played 37 different characters.
Oh.
All on the telephone.
I didn't
all
hear
about
that.
Two sentences each, you know, changing gestures and voices and inflections and dialects, you know, for an
hour
and a half.
Did you ever feel like you're going to trip over yourself?
Yeah, I did. And a couple times I did.
Then probably
but we recovered.
Part of the script, right?
Of course.
All 37 of you recovered.
And got right back on track.
And what about you, Rachel? You got an award for acting as well?
Yeah. And I was surprised. I
thought
Carl had a good shot at it. Well, because I don't think of myself as I still don't really think of myself as an actor. I like the challenge of it.
I've seen you in several things. You certainly are an actor.
Well, yeah, but it's not. You know, I have a high, real high bar up here for who I think of as actors, and you know, so I'm underneath that bar. But I was very pleased that the play was interesting enough that I got the award.
It was Soup Comes Last,
yeah,
as well.
Yeah, it was.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Oh, that's great. Well, congratulations to you both.
Thank
for that.
Thank you.
Any new writings? Are you working on anything at
yeah.
the moment?
Right now.
Always.
In fact, I just left. Well, I'm writing our first children's show. We're doing an adaptation of The Odyssey. Not the entire thing. It's going to be in three parts.
I was going to say, kids are not going to be able to stay attuned.
Right. Well, we're going to make
hours.
It. We're going to make it like a cliffhanger, we hope, that, you know, that you'll have to come back next year and see, you know, does Odysseus get home or not? And then I'm also writing one of our main stage shows this year. It's called Tony and the Soprano, and I'm particularly writing it for Erica Steenhagen and Joey Steenhagen, and Susanna Berriman's going to be in it, and Jesse Bush and Sophie Reppert. And it's I did one this year with all the music was by Gilbert and Sullivan. This year all the music is Italian opera. And this is the story of a guy named Tony who still lives with his mother. He's like 35. He's like in a dead-end job in Brooklyn, a place I know well. And the mother, who's driving him completely batty, rents the upstairs apartment to a Juilliard soprano student. And his life and everybody's life is changed by that. So I have been just filling myself up with music of Verdi and Donizetti and Rossini. And
what a chore.
It is, yeah.
I love that music.
So hopefully it'll be, you know, that's what I'm spending a lot of time on.
Huh. So I see you don't like challenges.
No. No, but you see, I really wanted to see those two people in that, in that kind of a play. Uh-huh. And that's the nice thing. And even Adam Bach, I have to say this, knew that Carl was going to be in The Drunken City. Mm-hmm. Adam, who, you know, has a play running in New York, and they had the choice of all the actors in New York to be in his play. When he came here, he knew that one of the actors was going to be Carl, and then he saw Precious Nonsense, and he knew that one of the other actors was going to be Eric Steenhagen. And that really, I think, resonated in his writing of the play.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So he's doing the same thing.
Yeah.
What about you for the future? Do you have any roles that are tumbling out soon?
This December at The Kitchen, I'm going to be doing David Sedaris's Santaland Diaries, which is another one-person show where David Sedaris has recounted his experience being an elf in Macy's Santaland over one holiday season.
Now there's where the pink hair could come in.
Right, right.
Really, really.
Oh, it's terribly, terribly funny, and I can't wait to start working on it.
You seem to like one-man shows. It seems like it would be a real challenge. Well, because I know a lot of actors prefer
challenge.
To be able to play off each other to develop in that way. But
yeah.
I think one-person shows are really
I love being on stage with other people. And that was when Rachel first came to me with Fully Committed, the first one-man show that I did. I was really a little nervous about it because there would be no one else on stage for me to talk to, no one to throw the ball back and forth with. Mm-hmm. But my director, Craig McDonald, was like, there's 37 different people on stage to throw the ball back and forth with. So it was quite a learning experience to find that I was my own scene partner. Like, you really have to just shift your energy in half a second to respond to yourself, and then ask yourself a question, and then shift and become a completely different person and answer that question, and then keep going, you know.
Did you hear a lot of schizophrenic jokes from your friends during that?
Yeah, I felt a little schizophrenic too.
And we all had our favorite character that Carl was doing.
You can push him, Mrs. Seabag.
Did you find yourself getting stuck in some of these two-minute roles?
Sometimes. Oh, absolutely. You know, like Mrs. Seabag, I actually repeat in Drunken City. There is one word that I say in Drunken City where this character, Mrs. Seabag, comes back. Comes back from the dead. And some people totally get it. So it's nice. It's nice doing a one-person show, but I really do love being on stage with other people and really just feeling that, you know, camaraderie and feeling that energy build.
And I've seen actors who, depending on who they're playing with, are better with actors, you know?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah.
So I would think that would be a factor too.
Well, Rachel, Carl was in the Drawer Boy this year, and he got to be opposite some pretty good actors.
Yes.
In that play.
Yes.
Yeah.
I think it's quite helpful for people to be around good actors.
Mm-hmm.
Any acting for you in the future?
Not this season, I don't think. I mean, I might be one of the children's plays, because sometimes we are hunting around for actors. So if anyone out there is interested in acting, they should call the Kitchen
call
Theater. But I might be one of the kids, but I'm not scheduled to be in anything this year.
Thank you so much for being with us. We have run out of time. You can still catch Carl in the Drunken City for the next couple days, so go down to the Kitchen Theater and check it out. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you very much, Sis.
Out of Bounds is produced by Tim Reppert at Rep Studio in Ithaca. We are a project of the Women's Interfaith Institute in Seneca Falls. Our theme music was composed by Diego Vega. If you want to talk to us, you can email us at weos@hws.edu. We'll be back next week. I'm Tish Perlman.